Good evening and welcome. I'd like to call the November 4th, 2013 meeting of the Ames-Surrey County Planning and Zoning Commission to order. Roll call, please.
Peggy.
Here.
Cowser. Gast.
Here.
Southers.
Here.
Donaldson. Miller.
Okay, thank you. The next item is really approval of the agenda, and I'm going to ask people for a show of hands here. We have three big items on the agenda here, and I'm going to ask which one you're here for. And so if you're here for a specific item, please raise your hand. The first one is the research park, the annex, okay? Okay, thank you. The next one is the optimum wind conditional use. Okay. And then the third one is the Natty subdivision. Okay, given we have somebody from every place, we're going to stay in the order that we're in here. So just thought maybe if we had nobody here for one of them, we could put that to the end. So with that, okay, we had the, I'm going to ask for a motion to approve the agenda as it stands. Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, all those opposed? Motion carries. We had the minutes distributed to us by email or on the web. Everybody have a chance to read those? Is there a motion to approve the minutes as they stood from our last meeting?
Oops.
Moved by Gast. Second by Cowser. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Minutes are approved. At this time, we have a period of time where you can come forward for public comment on anything that relates to Story County, but that's not on tonight's agenda. So if you care to bring something up to the commission, I'd ask you to step forward to the microphone and give your name and address, and we'll hear what you have to say. Yes. We don't get this very often.
Is Joe Riley, and I'm here representing Art Riley, my father, and he lives at 2959 South Riverside Drive, and so this definitely affects us.
Joe, can I ask you, is this related to one of the agenda items?
The research park and the planning, like I said, because of the fact that we were given no notice about what was going on, I found out about the meeting by accident.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not quite sure what proper procedure is here, and I apologize.
Okay.
Our letter was dated the 22nd, postmarked the 30th. We got it on the 1st, and we've had no time to prepare or really make any inquiries.
Okay. When we will be moving into this research park here, this is our first item, and we will have time for public comment specific to that at that time. So would that be more appropriate?
I believe so.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Riley. We'll catch you then for sure. Any other public comment? Okay. Not you, Charlie. Okay. Seeing none, let's move on. We have no old business. We do have some new business, three items, and the first one is actually AMD 01-13, the ISU Research Park Amendment. And with that, just to kind of let you know how we go, we'll have a staff presentation. The commissioners will ask questions of the staff. We'll have a presentation by the presenter, the applicant. We'll ask questions of him. And then Mr. Riley, then we'll ask for public comment, and everybody will be asked to step to the microphone. So with that, Ms. Harder, would you give us a presentation?
Good evening. This is AMD 01-13. We call it the ISU Research Park Amendment. This map does show those properties that are within orange that are considered the surrounding property owners. They are within a quarter mile of the application boundaries. Those are the ones that to whom we did send notice of tonight's meeting. The hatched-in area is the area that the applicants did file for Ames Urban Fringe Plan Amendment. And again, it is an amendment to Ames Urban Fringe Plan. As the commission well knows, The Ames Urban Fringe Plan is a component of the County Development Plan, which is the CDP, and this is to allow for future annexation and growth of the Iowa State University Research Park. Let me go back here for a second. You see the in the north, two circular drives. That is the current boundaries of the Ames River, or current general location of the Iowa State Research Park. And I do have site shots that I'll show. The current designation on the Ames River Fringe Plan, again, a component of the County Development Plan, is Industrial Reserve / Research Park and Natural Area. When the Ames Urban Fringe Plan was adopted by the entities of Story County, the City of Ames, and the City of Gilbert, it was identified that the research park would need to expand. It was put in this reserve classification, not anticipating the sped-up growth of the research park that has been experienced and which they are predicting will continue to be experienced, thus necessitating the change at this point, so that the growth can be sooner rather than later. The proposed amendment is to go from that industrial reserve to planned industrial and natural area. This is the area right around the research park. This is currently the planned industrial, and I have a couple slides to that. The applicant is Iowa State University Foundation and the Urban and Margaret Hunziker Apartments. There are four property owners, however, and I'll address this shortly. Both the Iowa State Research or Iowa State and Achievement Foundation, Hunziker Apartments LLC, but then Gary and Catherine May and Arthur and Kathleen Riley. These are essentially islands. These are homestead sites that are within the confines of the area to be amended on the Ames River Fringe Plan. So if you look on the slide on the left, where it says current designations, you see the boundaries in pink of the planned industrial. And again, these are the current land use designations on the adopted Ames Urban Fringe Plan map. And then the area to the south is the area proposed to be amended, is Industrial Reserve Research Park. And then that green line that goes through is the natural areas. Then if you look to your right, essentially that pink encompasses the entire property then, with the natural areas remaining. And I do want to acknowledge that City of Ames did develop these maps as part of their staff report that they presented to their Planning and Zoning Commission. And Charlie Kuster with the City of Ames is here too and can address the city's process. But as a joint plan, this has to be, the amendment has to be approved by both Ames and Story County. Are there any questions on thus far? I'm trying to take it a little bit slow steps here. Okay. Just some site shots of the properties currently used for the most part as row crop production. As you see, the larger site, about 200 acres, several parcels involved, recently harvested. This is looking towards the northeast, I believe. That natural area that you saw in the green is that tree line in the area, in the back of the photo. And then this looking due east. And then this is almost from the opposite direction looking towards the west. And again, maybe a little bit further north, you see the natural areas on that tree line. So they are existing wooded areas that would be anticipated to remain. And then looking towards the southwest. And then this is looking, same road, but looking a little bit more towards the northwest, further south on the road. This is one of those property owners that is not one of the applicants, but is that, if I go back here, and I did forget the pointer, I apologize. But this little leg over in here, and you'll see on this one, that's that farmstead in that picture. Again, another site shot looking towards the east, or west, pardon me. The staff report did include the City of Ames Commission report. That did incorporate all the policies of the Ames River Fringe Plan. I won't go over those at this time. I'll be glad to answer any specific questions the commission may have. But again, it's going from existing industrial reserve to planned industrial, and to allow for the future annexation of the land for the expansion of Iowa State Research Park. And instead of saying SUB01-13, it should be AMD01. That's the beauty of cut and paste. But your alternatives are, one, you may recommend approval to the Board of Supervisors and place this on the November 12th meeting of the Board of Supervisors. You may recommend conditional approval, and again, direct us to place on November 12th. You may recommend denial of the proposed County Development Plan Amendment. Again, keeping in mind the Ames Urban Fringe Plan is a component of our County Development Plan. Or lastly, you may remand it back, again, case number AMB01-13, to staff and the applicant and bring it forth to your December Planning and Zoning Commission meeting. I'll be glad to answer any questions. You don't deal with amendments to County Development Plan very often. But again, the process is similar to that of rezoning. You recommend to the Board of Supervisors.
Thank you, Leanne. What questions do we have of Leanne? I have one. A lot of times we talk about conditional stuff. I see no conditional items on this. Any other questions of Leanne? We can let her get her back later. Hello. Okay. Thank you. We have a representative of the applicant here.
Scott Reynolds, representing the Iowa State University Research Park, also who's really moving this forward for the Hunziker family and the Iowa State Foundation. So I'm just here to answer questions. I think it's a relatively straightforward change. It takes us from kind of a reserve to a designation that allows it to be rezoned or annexed. So we would request alternative number one.
Okay. I do have a question. I was out driving by there, and there's a fence row that goes east and west. On the north side is corn. On the south side is beans. Is that kind of the dividing line of that?
I believe so, yeah.
Okay.
South boundary.
And then it really runs from 530th over to Riverside, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Hold on. Any questions of Mr. Renault?
Are you able to give us an indication? Is there a project in mind for this?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, so we're just not allowed to know what that project is yet?
It's not usually standard procedure at this point in time. But, we're looking at 176 acre phase three of the research park that would include all the properties essentially in pink except those that are owned by property owners. We're looking at doing annexation. We can't do annexation until this process is done. And so those property owners that are in the islands will all be contacted either by the research park or the City of Ames once this part is done. Does that make sense? Because we can't submit an annexation application without having this done.
And your timeline that you're hoping for is?
The desire of this is to annex here towards the end of the year, which will probably be done about March, and then consider and just move through the development of the park really over about the next 3 years.
Thank you.
Other questions? Okay. Thank you, Ms. Renault. At this time, public comment. Mr. Riley, this might be a great time for you to get up here.
Well,
one of the things we're concerned about.
Would you please give your name and address again?
Joseph Riley, and I'm representing my father, Arthur Riley, who lives at 2959 South Riverside Drive. He's got one of the little islands in there. Our family concern, my dad is 89 years old, and this section of land, we homesteaded it, has been in our family for over 100 years. The house was built in 1904. My father still lives there. And our family's intention is to continue keeping it in the family. I hope to eventually spend the end of my lifetime out there and to be able to keep the property and pass it on. What we're trying to find out is this going to be something to where perhaps when my father passes away, we will not be allowed to continue to live there? Is this something to where if there was major damage to his house, say due to storm or fire, that he wouldn't be allowed to remodel because it's been rezoned? We're just trying to figure out how is this going to affect our family's ability to use it. We're one of the few families that all of us children were born there, raised there, our roots run deep there, and kind of like the old saying, when there's trouble, we know where home is, and we know where to run for cover, so to speak, and stand united, and we do not want to lose this property, and we're very concerned about how this affects us.
Okay. Reasonable concern. Who would answer that? Somebody from the county or somebody from the city? Charlie, would you come on up, please? Introduce yourself. And
I'm Charlie Kuster with the City of Ames Planning Department, and I thank Mr. Riley for his questions. We've been in conversation with his father and then with the neighbors across the street, the Mays. We're trying to put together a kind of a frequently asked questions and kind of address those. What are the impacts of these people to these properties upon annexation? And upon annexation, all property in the city is zoned agriculture, and from that, you'd be allowed to stay, keep it as a home. There's no reason why it would need to change. There wouldn't be any reason why he couldn't sell it, transfer it. As long as it's being used for a home, you've got rights in perpetuity. It'd be up to you whether you choose to sell it or not to sell it, either to ISU Research Park if they were looking to buy it, or just somebody else. Other changes upon annexation, you know, you'll be subject to city codes and ordinances and permits and requirements like that. But as far as the use of the property and the continuation of it as a household, that could continue.
Charlie, one of the questions that he had was if it was partially damaged, would he be able to rebuild?
Yes, the city's non-conforming ordinance is pretty forgiving, I should say. I believe it. Home or property has to be damaged to 70% of its value before you have to rebuild it in conformance with the zoning code. And in this case, since it's a pre-existing lot, it doesn't, I'm sure, I know it doesn't meet the five, no, maybe it doesn't. 1 acre minimum lot size, do you meet the 1 acre minimum lot size? So there's no nonconformities or anything like that. There'd be no reason why you could not rebuild a homestead on that site.
So it seems like the big thing would be annexation.
Yeah,
eventually.
Next step, and prior to we get that far, I do want to meet with the Rileys and the Mays, and then John Ford, who lives a little bit to the north, and then there's another private property owner to let them know what all is involved.
Thank you. Others? Scott, Mr. Renault? I know we have a couple that's here. They're kind of wondering about what, as this develops, what might it look like around the edges and the fringes? You know, how, from what I see of the research park, it's a good looking place. Is that in the plans? Is it going to be a piece of junk? What's it going to be?
No, it's there is a master plan developed for them.
Can you speak closer to the microphone? You're really hard to hear.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
Sorry. Usually I blow these away. Sorry. There is a master plan for the park that's been developed. That will get shared with really at the city's at the time to do the city annexation. It is available if you want to see it. But it's really intended to be a very high-quality research park, very much a campus-type atmosphere. A little bit different than the current park where we may have multiple stories, but nothing probably over two or three stories. There are airport restrictions nearby that we have to live with. So there's some reasons for not doing very tall. Really all the green space that's out there will be preserved. We're not developing into that. That'll be left out of the 176 acres, 65 acres is left in green space. So it is it's going to be a fairly, it's going to be a really nice looking multi, when I say multi-use, I mean there's going to be park ground integrated in with the building and the development.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions or comments from the public? Seeing none, I'll close the public comment section. Commissioners, do we have a motion coming out of this? It would be nice to have a motion and then discussion.
I will move that the Story County Planning and Zoning Commission recommends approval of the CBD amendment as put forth in case AMD 0113 to the Story County Board of Supervisors and direct staff to schedule review of a review by the Board of Supervisors on November 12th.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, motion by Gass, second by Struthers. We are open for discussion.
I would agree with you that the current plan development is of a very high quality, and I would anticipate that the future phases would be of like quality.
I agree. I think it's when I see the research park, it's always very stylish, a lot of open space, looks good. And I think it's necessary for Story County to have that. They're talking about a lot of jobs coming into the county, so I think it's critical. I think it's essential. Other comments? Okay, we have a motion and a second. Roll call, please.
Miller.
Yes.
Couser.
Yes.
Gast.
Yes.
Biggie.
Yes.
Donaldson. Struthers?
Yes.
And the motion passes. Mr. Riley, Mike, and Jen, thank you all for being here on that. Mr. Renault, thank you for being here. And with that, we'll move on to the second item on the agenda. And that is CUP 08-13, the Optimum Wind 3 Conditional Use Permit.
If you'll recall, last month at your Planning and Zoning Commission, you saw cases for Optimum Wind 2 and 1. That just happens to be the way that we name them for our benefit and be able to keep cases straight. It doesn't mean there are 3 wind turbines, 2 or 1. Just so that there's no clarification. We just need to be a little bit specific on our end. It is case number 08, CUP 08-13. Again, the site location map is on your right. The Hatchton area is the area of the proposed conditional use permit. There are 2 parcels incorporated into the boundaries of the conditional use permit. And then those properties outlined in orange are those within a quarter mile of the project boundaries that did receive notification of the pending Planning and Zoning Commission meeting, or the tonight's Planning and Zoning Commission meeting. Let me go back. The green is the city limits, the city of Nevada. Just to orient you a little bit, the bottom hatched in where it says Lincoln Highway, to the left of that is Harrington Park. So if you know where Starbucks is here in Nevada, not the coffee shop, but the ice cream store, you go south of that, you see the track and the football field for the high school, and there is a wind turbine there for the city of Nevada, or the school. There's a wind turbine there, a smaller scale that's been there for a great number of years. This is the development of one utility scale wind turbine, again located east of Nevada. It's a nameplate capacity of 3 megawatts. The rotor diameter and tower height are 381 and 302 feet, with a total height of 494 feet. Again, interconnection point will be to an Alliant three-phase distribution line. It happens to be the same point of interconnection as the Swanson conditional use permit that you saw last week or last month. So some of this will look familiar just because you did have another wind turbine to the northeast of this location. Currently, the property is zoned A1 agricultural and CWEC commercial wind energy conversion system. CWEECS are allowed through a conditional use permit process in the A1 district. The applicant is Optimum Wind Renewable, and property owner is the Kenny Lindstrom Foundation. Again, it's a single unit, 494 feet in height. The height is important because that does dictate the distance from that helps us determine the appropriate setback. It's going to require less than an acre in size for the turbine and associated parking and ancillary uses. There is an executed agreement with the landowners, and that does place where that would go on the property. It's in the Nevada Fire District, and there are two drainage districts. You'll see when I get some site shots, there's floodplains on the property as well. We do look at Section 90.04 of the Story County, Iowa Code of Ordinances as a conditional use permit. The Planning and Zoning Commission, you all are the recommending body to the Board of Adjustment. The Board of Adjustment is the final decision-making authority for all conditional use permits. In making your recommendation and in the board taking final action, they look at a series of development criteria that are specified in the Code of Ordinances. These look at compatibility, transition, traffic, parking and loading, signs and lighting, and environmental protection. So all applications for conditional use permit have to address conformance to these specific development criteria. In addition to that, there are additional criteria above and beyond that must all be met. I'm not going repeat these verbatim because the Commission has seen numerous of these, but for the members of the audience to at least summarize, it will adequately safeguard the health, safety, and general welfare of those in the vicinity, not negatively affect the supply and quality of light and air to surrounding property, not result in congestion in the roadways or hazard from fire, flood, similar dangers, does not have any impairment on established property values. And it must be consistent with our ordinance and the county development plan. Again, the county development plan is the county's land use plan. So if we go above and beyond that criteria, however, for CLEX, for wind turbines, and we look at everything from A to P, this is codified in our code of ordinances, and all applications in order to be approved ultimately by the Board of Adjustment must show compliance with all of the standards on this page and the two other slides. I'm not going to go through each and every one of these. If anyone ever has any questions, I'll be glad to answer. Just some generalities about this turbine. It's similar to what we've seen in the 100-plus we have in Story County, tubular monopole type, painted a non-reflective color with a matte finish. That is what our regulations require. No plans to use signage other than the manufacturer's logo and name on the turbine. Lighting used as required by the FAA. There's a feeder line that will go from the CWEX to the utility substation 19th Street. And if you look on the screen, that yellow line represents that feeder line from the turbine. You see the red dot towards the top, that's the general vicinity of the proposed turbine. There will be one service entrance, approximately 16 feet wide, and it's only taken one point of access off T Avenue. And it's designed to really not have a lot of traffic. You can operate these things remotely. There might be occasional maintenance needed, but generally it's not daily traffic and great number of traffic trips to and from the site. Again, as I've said a couple times, the total height is 494 feet with a ground clearance of 112 feet. That does meet the established standard. It would require setbacks on public right-of-way and communication electrical lines of 543.4 feet. What our standards say is 1.1 feet times the total height. If you can see that black dot with purple writing, that is the location of the turbine. The black lines are the parcel lines. The purple fuzzy is the latitude and longitude. That's how we locate the turbine spatially. The lighter green on the left of the screen is the city limits, the city of Nevada. You see the railroad tracks running south. That's right away parallel to that, and about two-thirds of the way down the screen. That yellow box is a property that's assessed residentially, and then there are a couple of farmsteads within the screenshot, too. But the closest farmstead or dwelling is approximately 2,000 feet from the proposed turbine. That does exceed our minimum requirements. The blue you see is our special flood hazard area boundary, our floodplain boundary, and the proposed use is not within that floodplain boundary. There are a couple of communication towers within 2 miles. All applications are required to identify existing communication towers or other wind turbines to make sure there's no interference that would affect the operability of those existing units. And then an acoustical analysis was prepared, has a noise level of 40.5 decibels. That is lower than the county level. That's in the standards of 60 decibels, so it does meet that standard as well. The application did include decommissioning budget, and there will be a pre-construction survey done in coordination with the Story County Engineer and other applicable road authorities if they're using U.S. Highway 30 or any of the interstate highway system to travel to the site. They'll need to coordinate that. We did send notification letters out to surrounding property owners last Thursday. They were mailed October 30th, and then legal notices published in all three official newspapers on October 31st. Staff would recommend if the Planning and Zoning Commission were to take action tonight to recommend approval to the Board of Adjustment that the six conditions for approval be considered. One is that vehicular parking associated with construction operation or maintenance of the CEWIC take place on site and not at any time be in the public right-of-way. Enter into an agreement with the county for the purposes of decommissioning escrow account and that be accomplished prior to applying for the zoning permit. The applicant enter an agreement with the county for the purposes of providing financial security for bridge and road restoration if necessary, and a copy submitted along with the application for zoning permit. Pre-construction survey be completed, and we receive that prior to application for zoning permit. Road authorities be notified at least 24 hours prior to construction, and then driveway entrance permit for access onto T Avenue be approved prior to application for zoning permit. These probably are starting to look very, like you probably could repeat them for me because you've seen them now within a month of each other, very, very similar to the last three cases you had last month. The alternatives to consider are to recommend approval to the Board of Adjustment as put forth in case CUP 08-13 and have us placed on the December 4th Board of Adjustment meeting. Agenda, recommend conditional approval, recommend denial or recommend tabling it or remanding it back to staff and the applicant and bring it forth to your December 2nd meeting under old business. And I just have a couple quick site shots. Oh, no, this is the site layout. That purple line on the top is the right-of-way boundary along the existing T Avenue. The green or the red line coming in is the driveway. Initially, it might be 20, 21 feet wide to allow for the construction traffic, but upon completion, this is ultimately approved, it would be narrowed to 16 feet, entrance and exit. The red is the center of the turbine, and then the blue around that is the perimeter of the foundation for the turbine. And then the red is the, what is the clearing limits, and then you do see the overall parcel boundaries. This is looking from Lincoln Highway to the north. It rises up. The turbine is not proposed to be on the south part of this parcel, just immediately north of Lincoln Highway, but the line will come through. I did want it. This is part of conditional use permit. And just let you see the terrain of the land, too, because it is generally similar north and south. The railroad tracks are there on the horizon. And then we go north and look to the south. I had to have a train going by at that time. It's in this parcel that the turbine would be located then, about 500 feet down. And I think the computer froze. I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Leanne. Commissioners, what questions do we have of Leanne? I see none for the moment. Do we have a representative of the applicant here? Please step forward. And,
hello. I'm John Borman with Optimum Renewables. My address is 4619 62nd Street in Urbandale, Iowa. Should I describe a little bit about the project?
Describe your project a little bit.
Sure, certainly. At Optimum Renewables, we're focusing on community-scale wind projects. And what that means are not like the big wind projects you see from MidAmerican Energy in the paper, but smaller projects, one, two turbine projects, where the electricity is actually going to be used in the local community. And in this area, we're able to find a willing buyer, which is Align Energy, and then a landowner that wants a turbine on the property. And in Optimum Renewables, we've been in the renewable space for about 2 years, and have several of these community-style projects in the Central Island.
You saw the six proposed conditions, which would be over and above all the other requirements that you've met. Did you have any questions concerning any of those?
No, they looked pretty doable from my perspective. Yes.
Thank you.
Other questions?
To get to the site. I would imagine to get, your large blades and your large equipment, you can't be dragging it through town. So you're going to access the property by way of?
I believe that's T Avenue to the north. We actually have to have a wide road because of the turn radius for the towers and the blades is significant. The logistics side of it will come into play, and they'll determine what bridges we are able to cross with the weight and what roads we can take, and then ultimately deliver it to the site. But it will require us to have that construction width road as well as an extra wide driveway so that we can turn the equipment onto the road. Yep. But I don't know specifically what the route would be through. Or I should say around town, and we'll go through town.
Any idea of approval when you would start construction?
Our intention would be able to start construction as soon as practical, giving weather and delivery of equipment to site. Our hope would be able to start perhaps as early as next month in December, or actually, if not able to do that, then sometime in the first quarter next year.
Once you break ground, how long does it take to complete the project?
Good question.
If things go well.
Yeah, okay, thank you. I was going to throw that out. You can expect the civil work is going to be 2 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks, which is widening the driveway entrance permit, or the entrance, and then also the foundation will be probably another couple of weeks. And then after that, then we'll take delivery of the turbine site, and the crane will put it together, and the crane work is going to be less than a week of basically putting the turbine up.
Okay, in 5 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
All right, 5 weeks?
If you compact it with no gaps, but there will always be gaps between the constructing the road and then doing the foundation and like normal projects.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
One of the things that came up last month in terms of the of these projects was the decommissioning. All right, now how are you handling that? Is that purchase a bond, or is it cash, or what is it?
So we would put in an escrow account to start funding for the estimated decommissioning cost and set that money aside.
Actual dollars or just bond?
Actual dollars in an account.
Right now, what are you anticipating that would be?
So the way we look at it, the life of the turbine, the book life is 20 years.
Okay.
Practically, they last much longer if they're well taken care of. And starting at year 15, we would do year 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, and so that cash is there. Our hope would be is that cash will be there for another 10 years because it won't be necessary to decommission in 20 years. So the turbine was selected, the quality of the turbine. We would hope it would be there 30 years.
So if I heard you correctly, the money does not go in until year 15?
Yes, correct.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Is Optimum Wind an Iowa-based company, and do your profits stay in our state?
Yes. We are a small business in Iowa, and it's owned and employed by Iowa.
Thank you, Mr. Mormon. Appreciate it. At this time, we have for public comments, questions, and if you care to, step to the microphone, give your name and address, and we'll listen. All these people here, nobody's going to say anything. Wow. I'm going to wait about 10 more seconds. Okay. Seeing nobody moving to the microphone, I'll close the public comment section. And I would look for a motion and discussion.
I'd like to make a motion for the purposes of discussion, and that is that the story will be option two, that the Story County Planning and Zoning Commission recommends conditional approval of the conditional use permit as set forth in case CUP 0813 to the Story County Board of Adjustment with the 6 conditions shown on the staff slide that is currently present. Further, staff is directed to place the item on a December 4th Story County Board of Adjustment agenda.
Motion by Gast, is there a second? Susan Donaldson, second. So, discussion.
I think the applicant has retained a very confident firm on this, and the documents all looked in order. So, that certainly makes our job easier.
A lot of wind generators going up recently. Is there something in the planning for, because it does change our landscape. It changes the way our county looks. Is there a plan as far as when we say enough's enough?
There is not. That does, we can relay that back to your joint meeting at the Board of Supervisors earlier this evening, and if that is something that, if that's a discussion that policymakers need to have or not. Yeah. No, that, honestly, that's never been, that type of discussion has never been on the table. I know I've heard from different entities, whether it be public or just private conversations, that our horizon, our landscape is significantly different than it was 10 years ago and is constantly evolving now. So I guess I'll put it back to you guys. If that's something, maybe under staff comments, that you want to direct staff to look at with our work program. I'm not sure how we go about doing that, but it is something in discussion we could have.
Before we go on any further, too, I'd like to just, and I wish I would have said it to the last group, because, there's always another chance it could be going to the Board of Supervisors meeting to listen and talk about this again. And on this one here, is it December 4th, Board of Adjustment? So a lot of you here, if you're not happy with what comes out tonight, you always have another opportunity. So any other comments from the commissioners? Hearing none, roll call.
Feathers?
Yes.
Donaldson?
Yes.
Miller?
Yes.
Towser?
Yes.
Gast?
Yes.
Figge?
Yes. And the motion passes, and we'll go on to the Board of Adjustment. Thank you. Thank you all for being here, that we're here for this. Too much paper. Okay, we're going to move on to the last new business item, SUB 09-13, the Natty subdivision. And Leanne, will you give us a presentation?
Again, the property boundaries of the proposed subdivision are in yellow hatch. You see the creek runs through that. It's an irregular shaped parcel. And then those properties outlined in orange are those within a quarter mile that have received notice, the surrounding property owner notice for tonight's meeting. This is an application to do a major subdivision plat of one lot into seven development lots and then three outlots. The applicant, I do want to note, requested a waiver to not require to allow the access easements to be gravel rather than a paved surface. Because this application takes access via easements, we do not apply the paving standards to that type of an access. And that's probably the only time you'll hear me say that, because we have changed our regulations, as you well know, with the code of ordinances that went into effect this July. So this type of a layout with access easements providing access to these number of lots would not be permitted. And I'll address that in greater detail. But the waiver is not necessary. We don't apply our paving. The current zoning is AR, agricultural residential, that has a minimum lot size of 1 acre net. The applicant and property owner is Orson Natty. It is being reviewed as a preliminary subdivision plat. With preliminary plats, it is the role of the Planning and Zoning Commission to forward a recommendation onto the Board of Supervisors. The way the process is set up, this is the one and only opportunity that the Planning and Zoning Commission has to review the plat. You do not take any action on final plats. Those go directly to the Board of Supervisors. I do want to point out this is within 2 miles of the city, 2 mile jurisdictional, 2 miles of the city of Nevada, and a 2 mile jurisdictional authority does apply. Since the early 1990s, we've had an adopted 28E agreement with the city of Nevada that defines procedural matters and standards for approval. As of last week, when I drafted the staff report, the applicant had not applied to the City of Nevada, so that would be a follow-up question to the applicant, see what, if any, progress has been made with going forward to the City of Nevada. I kind of alluded to this. This application originally came in through conceptual review about a year ago. We have to use the term vested. They are vested, have a vested right to the old regulations, and the new code of ordinances do not apply to this particular application. So if you did get a little bit confused and you're looking through your code of ordinances, you had to throw those out and put the old ordinance hat back on, and that is why the access to these lots is something that could be considered through the layout. So with that, the staff report did review the plat for conformance with former regulations, specifically as set forth in Chapter 6 of the Land Development Regulations, and also Chapter 7, that is the general platting or general site plan requirements. Any questions thus far? Okay. Given the odd configuration of the existing lot, I have two slides with the subdivision plat. I had to break them up into two because I really visually cannot show you the layout on one slide. If you'll look on the right-hand side of the screen is the entire subdivision plat, and I've circled the area in yellow. That is what is enhanced on the left-hand side. If you look, this is 620th Avenue, or S14. The proposal takes access through an existing access easement of 40 foot, and it comes over here. There's a 50-foot access easement that goes north to south to access lots 1, 2, and 3, and this squiggly line right here is shown as a tree line. I have site shots. I'll try to demonstrate these in the site shots as well. And then you continue on with that access easement over here to where it accesses lots 4, 5, and 6. So again, two parallel north to south 50-foot access easements. The primary access for these six lots are off of 620th. And then everything, the remainder, are outlots to the rear, and that is predominantly floodplain. And outlots, by their definition, are not buildable lots in the old regulations as well as the current regulations. And then I do want to look the southern side of the plat. So let me go back. You see lot 7 over in here. Lot 7 is 1820 acres. Is a larger, mostly undevelopable lot given the existence of terrain issues and floodplain on the property. There may be some buildable areas over outside of floodplain, but again, there's some topographical changes, and I do have some site shots to demonstrate that. But then you see the creek does kind of divide the property and limit access to lot 7. I did go out today, and there is an existing drive down to the south. It seems to be shared with the cemetery on the west. Not shared, but I mean, it shares an entrance point, we'll put it that way. And you can access the site from that property, or the property from that site. Any questions on the subdivision lot layout?
That wasn't in our information, was it?
It was another tab to the right.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
We'll go back then, because this is the first time I've seen the lot.
That's fine. Actually, when we initially put it on, it was the day after we reposted it. On Friday, it was reposted. And you might have been there, right? Early bird caught the worm.
Okay. So through 1, 2, 3, can you point them out?
One is right up here, lot 1, then 2 and 3 are south, and those lots 2 and 3 are both 1 plus 1.181 acres, lot 1 is 1.75 acres. And then you go further west, You have lot north to south, lot 4, 5, and lot 6. 6 is down here.
Outlots are...
Then the outlots are A, B, and C. And then lot 7 is the remainder. I don't think I'm going to go into this great detail because the staff report did define the areas that staff noted inconsistencies or areas where the specific sections have not been adhered to. I'll just, for the record, list those, and then if you have any questions. In particular to Chapter 6, Section 6.90.C1E, that's owner's name, 6.90C1H. This really deals with the access easements and how front setbacks are measured. The regulations do allow you to measure from the edge from the property line. In this case, it's a 50-foot front setback, but there's also a 50-foot front access easement. So in essence, you could put a structure right on the edge of the access easement. Staff would recommend that access easement be treated as de facto right-of-way for the consideration of how we measure setbacks, and then structures be placed another 50 feet back from the edge of the access easement. Again, regulations do not require that, but we would think it would be a good, safe practice of any future property, any future builders of the site, that they would want to do that. And lot 1 will be considered a corner lot because there are two accesses to it, so the setbacks applicable to that need to be shown. And then really, lot 7, we would recommend a building envelope be located on lot 7. That would be the definition of where that building, if a house were to be placed there, it would be tied to that location. Given the slope considerations and the floodplain concerns of the property, especially when you're considering locating septic along with the building, we think it'd be a very good practice to have a building envelope defined. So, one, we can determine what the applicable setback should be, how we measure it, because at this point in time, where that primary access will be to that lot is not defined. We can assume it's from the south, given the floodplain and existing drive, but at this point, we're not clear. 6.90.C1K deals with concerns on the part of Margaret James, the environmental health director. She did note some concerns and requirements for soils report to be submitted prior to it going much further. And 6.90C1L, I did want to note that, and I'll talk to this later when I get to floodplain management, there are some different regulations that will apply considering that there is floodplain on the property. And then 6.90C2B, staff did review the covenants for the proposed subdivision. Again, covenants are a civil matter that cannot be enforced by Story County authorities. We do review covenants to ensure there are not conflicts with our regulations and the proposed covenants. In this case, ordinance item number 18 in the covenants prohibit any variances being approved for the applicable setback requirements. If an application were to come forward requesting a variance, the Board of Adjustment would have to take action to either approve or deny that. They cannot rely on the covenants, again, because it is a civil matter. And then item number 20, so we would recommend that be removed from the language in the covenants. And then also item number 20 is in regards to a tree cover that can be removed. We would recommend that be placed on the face of the plat, in addition to the covenants, but definitely on the face of the plat, and that it is a county regulation, and it would be enforced through the county. Letters regarding gas and electricity were not submitted with the application, so that would be 6.90C2J. And then moving to Chapter 7, which is the general site planning standards, there's some concerns with 7.40B, the lot arrangement and design. Specifically in regards to that Lot 7, I think you can get the gist from that image. Those pink lines are the LIDAR, the topography changes on the site. You do see in the, it's relatively flat going from the northwest to southeast. That's the floodplain. And so the topography changes, slopes downhill, and then the flat terrain of the floodplain and creek, and then uphill towards the west. And there would be some concerns with Lot 7 as to where buildability could be accomplished successfully. Staff would also, given the size of Lot 7, recommend a plat note that restricts any future division of Lot 7. Again, keeping in mind that the minimum lot size of the AR zoning district is 1 acre, and that is well over 18 acres. And then again, 7.40I, the required dimensions and setbacks, that goes back to what I talked about earlier, with setbacks from the easement line, and we would recommend the practice that they be setback rather than just the property line. Street frontage requirements, that access easement from 620th and all access easements on the site, because they serve two or more lots, have to all be a minimum 50 feet. There are a couple instances on the plat where it's shown to be 40 feet. In order to meet the regulations that currently existed, they have to be a minimum of 50 feet. It is our understanding that specifically as on that primary access off of 620th, the applicant does have another 10 feet to the south via second easement, so that needs to be reflected on the face of the plat. 7.50.2, protection natural vegetation cover. As you'll see in the site shots, there are a large number of trees on the site. We do define what a significant tree is in the ordinance. Staff, and we, not only that, the regulations also require if trees are removed, and it is suggested that trees are not removed, but if trees are removed, that replacement trees have to be either planted on site or within a quarter mile of the boundary of the site. Staff would suggest that those trees that meet the definition of a significant tree be identified with that final plat, and then a plan for how any mitigation of the trees proposed to be removed would be defined and submitted as well. But again, that would be accompanying a final plat. If the commission's of the opinion, however, that you think you need that for the preliminary plat, that would be something for you to discuss in your deliberation. And then lastly, 7.50.4 addresses stormwater management and water quality, and the regulations do require that best management practices are practiced for stormwater management. I do want to note that in regards to E911 addressing, because we are taking access off what will not be defined as a public road, it won't have a street sign or anything on it, each of the lots will have one address posted two times. At the primary entrance to all the lots off of 620, there'll be seven blue, because there's already one there already, I think, six to seven blue markers on 620. And then the drive into each property will have a blue marker too. So the applicant or future property owners would be responsible for the cost for two addresses. And this is in accordance with our E911 addressing ordinance. These are your interagency review comments. We did send this out for interagency review comment. Dave Swanson, Story County Assessor's Office, noted it would be assessed under the 5-year Iowa platting law, and any vacant lots after 5 years will then go to a residential market value. So in other words, they'll maintain their agricultural valuation, and after 5 years, they'll increase in value. Scott Wall did note the owner's name was not on the plat and then had some concerns regarding recorded meets and bounds descriptions and whether they are whether they match up. And then again, Margaret James's comments. Notification letters were mailed last Thursday. Legal notices, again, for this case were published on October 31st. And again, on the floodplain management program, as this is in the special flood hazard area, in accordance with our floodplain management regulations, which are not just Story County's, we have to adopt the minimum ordinance put out by the National Flood Insurance Program. So this is actually a national mandate. We would recommend, and so what the minimum ordinance requires is that when you have a subdivision of 5 acres or greater, or I think it's 10 lots or more, I don't remember the exact, but it does meet the standard, base flood elevations need to be defined. We have an interpretation from the state floodplain management coordinator that it doesn't need to be defined with the platting. The boundary needs to be shown with the platting, but at such time that development is to come forward, the property owner at that time has to have additional studies done to determine that base flood elevation of that floodway fringe boundary. So that is a condition of approval that staff would recommend. And then some site shots. This is looking at the cemetery. Hold on. Okay. This is looking, the cemetery is on your left, and you're looking towards the north. Towards what would be along the creek, you see the trees on the right. The creek would meander then up to kind of northwesterly direction. And this is where I drove up today to try to find a buildable area for lot 7. This is standing back on the road, looking same direction north. And so you see how the grade does rise. Now I'm actually back over by lots 1 through 6, so back in the northern part of the subdivision, and looking down the boundary, that would be one of the access easements and the tree line. And then this would be the access easement along to lots 4 to 6. You see the tree line to your left. Lot 4 would be right there in front of you. And then this is a little bit further to the west, looking down, and generally would be the outlot down the plat. But then you see how the topography rises towards the east. That would be the buildable areas for lots 4 through 6. Back in here is beyond the creek. And I've got some pictures looking back in this direction. This is probably if lot 7 were to be built, maybe one of the buildable areas. Again, keeping in mind there are substantial topography changes. Again, looking at access easement, or going to the site, and the topography changes. It is definitely a steep grade. This is looking due east along that access easement along the north property line. You see, as you continue further out past the tree line, you'll get to 620th, and I'll zoom here shortly. You can, again, see how the lots go up and down. This tree line, then, is the boundary of where one of the access easements is on the west side, and then on the east side is the other access easement. I pointed out the squiggly lines on the plat as the boundaries of those wooded areas. And again, more of the access. And then I've gone closer to 620th. That treed area is to my right now, if you turn to your right. And then you can see the sign back here, back along 620th. And then I'm standing at that sign looking towards the west. So this is the primary entrance point to all six lots or seven. We don't know for sure. And you can see where it dips down. The first access easement would be where this tree line begins and then dips down, and then the second access easement on the rear side or the west side of the tree line. And then I did say I kind of got up in there and tried to find some. I mentioned that tree area that I'd show you shortly. That's where I am right now. I was basically kind of over up in here, maybe a little bit further off the screen. But I'm looking kind of north, slightly northeast. And this is definitely northeast. I was over, right over in here, you see that tree line again. That was showing you where the access easements were for the north to south. This is very unusual because you normally deal with lots that are for roads, and so we have clearly defined right-of-ways. Using access easements is a practice as we hope will not be encouraged in the future, because it does bring a number of concerns in regards to public right-of-way and different various issues. This is a little bit going further back towards the south and just panning over towards the east with the camera, just so you can get a sense of what the terrain is there. It's a very beautiful location, extremely beautiful. Your alternatives to consider are to recommend approval of the major subdivision preliminary plat as put forth in case number SUB09-13 to the Board of Supervisors, and direct staff to place on the November 19th Board of Supervisors agenda. You may recommend conditional approval, again, directing staff to shoot for that same day. You may recommend denial, again, the same day. Or lastly, you may remand it back to staff and the applicant for additional review and modification, and it would come back on your December 2nd, 2013 old business agenda. Are there any questions?
None. Questions of Leanne?
I don't remember a list of conditions.
I think there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
It would seem to me there are some needs that must be met, and there are some wants. There are some recommendations to be done. But there are definitely some things that need to be done in this, right?
Correct.
Questions of Leanne? Okay.
But you'd indicated that this has been under review for a number of months, starting with a conceptual meeting many months ago, and is now coming to fruition. And there also seems to be a number of things which have to be met still. And then maybe some things that you would highly recommend be done. Why is this on this agenda in this condition, as opposed to everything having been taken care of or being on the next agenda?
The way the calendar is established by the commission, as well as the Board of Adjustment, if they meet the deadline, it goes on the agenda. And then the decision is left to the commission whether or not you accept it. There were a number of years ago, it used to be in the regulations, actually a great number of years ago, that staff had a little bit more ability to not place something on the agenda, and that's not good nor bad. I think it's an opportunity to have a public discussion on the application.
Thanks, Leanne. Do we have a representative of the applicant here? Please step forward.
Hello. My name is Orson Natty. I live at 910 C Avenue here in Nevada.
Do you have anything to say about your development here?
I did have a lot line drawn up with lot 7 as to show where the building site could be. I have that with me if you guys would like to see it. I guess everything else that I need to come into compliance with, I mean, I want to be in compliance, so I'd like to get that stuff together and keep moving forward, I guess.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Natty?
The easement road, who's going to take care of that when the lots get sold? Who's responsible for maintaining that road?
I talked with an attorney, with Mr. Baffy, about it, and we thought we'd have a road agreement drawn up, and that would be under the 6 lots. So I guess each lot would have a 6 share in the maintenance of the road.
And there's another development that's already under, there's already some houses being built that seem to share the same road.
Correct. There is a house, the lot on the corner there, shares that driveway solely.
So they would be also participating in the maintenance up to a point?
That I'm not for sure. I don't know exactly how that would work. I think the way it is right now, that lot has an easement through my driveway, but they are responsible for the maintenance of it. So I guess that would hold true.
Other questions on Mr. Natty? We'll be back to you, maybe. Thank you for being here. Now it's time for comments from the public. So this will be the time to step forward to the microphone.
My name is Erin James. I live at 4830 Waller Street, Ames, Iowa. We are property or partial owners to the east of Indian Creek in the Pop Second Edition subdivision, my husband and I. Our biggest concerns, I guess, are concerning the floodplain and the access. It has nothing to do with us, really, but, I mean, that floodplain is very soft. We all see how much it floods, even part of our property is in that lot there. We worry about how regrading of the future subdivision would affect our property with regards to the floodplain. And my other concern, I guess, my disappointment with future subdivision is that when we purchased these lots a year ago, we bought them as a large acre lot. And I know he has every right to divide them down to an acre, but I bought my property hoping I was going to have multi-acre farms or housing around us, and that was how I was hoping it would stay. I know it's sitting north of us and not as near, but if I had wanted to live in an area that was so tightly dense in population, I would have bought in a subdivision such as Buck Hill up in Ames, where they had those kind of properties.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I was hoping to have larger acres and stuff, and not double the amount of neighbors we are future going to have. And I guess the biggest concern, though, is the floodplain, as far as I'm concerned, and the regrading and that kind of thing.
Can you indicate on the map where your property is? Yes.
We are the outlot directors to the south, and we have 1, 2, 3 lots up to S4.
Thank you.
All the way up to
So you just off the south 210th Street? Where am I missing? 620th is the S14.
Yeah. directly. That's
oh, I see. Oh, you're right along there. Okay.
Yeah, all the way to the creek.
Okay. How large is your lot?
One is 4 acres, one is 3.5, the other is 2.5, and then 3 acres in outlot and CRP.
Okay.
The one up to the creek, yes, is an outlot. The whole night without it.
I'm struggling the whole time.
Well, all the stuff in yellow plus the one directly to the west.
Thank you.
On that same line. And I guess when we purchased these, we assumed most of that land was in CRP, and being that 60% of it seems to be in a floodplain, that it would stay in CRP and not have the natural beauty disrupted with that much building. So, that's all I got.
Thank you for coming up. Appreciate it. What was the last name? Was it Steam? Oh, okay.
Hello, my name is Keith Hodson, and Brenda and I live at 21101 620th Avenue, which is like a trapezoidal-shaped property. If it works.
Oh,
it would be this piece of property right here, and actually we own these two lots adjacent to it as well. So we had a few questions, and we'd be happy to meet with Orson and go over these. This was all new to us, and so we really don't know where this is at or anything. It's kind of a surprise. But we did have a couple of comments. One, Leanna kind of addressed this a little bit before regarding roads and easements. I guess we would prefer if it was roads and right-of-ways as opposed to easements for the long-term makeup. And I know that maybe the ordinance just changed, but in the past, the county has required paved roads, like at Krupp Country Edition to the south. He was required to put a paved road in and maintain that in the past, and that would have been within the city's 2-mile jurisdiction, too. So I don't know how that all works, and maybe they required it. Okay. But I guess that would be the preferred method, but, you know, whatever works out there. And other utilities that might go along with that. You know, just that they're put in, like in your, I think your new ordinance, that they'd be put in ahead of the roadway. I'm also curious about the county conservation director, if he has commented on this property as of yet. Okay, so I kind of give you a little bit of history. When we originally purchased this lot right here, it was the first subdivision of this whole piece right here. And that was about in 1993 or 1994 when we purchased that lot. And at the time, Mr. Leckwell was the county conservation director, and he came out and inspected this property. And this line right here is where the fence row is right now. This piece in here was row cropped previously, and then it was fence planted in trees. But from the fence line this way, it was an undisturbed area. And when he did his inspection in that area, he found native prairie plantings in that area. And he recommended at that time to not allow any development west of this fence line here. So we were only allowed to be in this area, which is all we wanted at the time anyway. So that's where we purchased. But that was probably recorded, or it's in the platting of, I know when we did our property. Now, there has been disturbed area up in this area, which Leanne showed on one of her photos of the corn ground. But as far as I know, this area in here has not been disturbed and will still be that native area. So I guess we recommend that you look into that, and it would be our recommendation not to allow development on the west side of this fence line here. Leanne pointed out the tree clearing. Is that a current requirement? Where if you remove a tree, you have to replace it? Okay. Well, that might be kind of troublesome here. I don't know if you can bring up the plat. Yeah, that'd be fine. But this, well, I guess right here is where the trees start. So in order to, maybe this road doesn't have to go all the way through. Again, it would, it's a serve lot three. So these trees would have to be removed in this area. And I don't know if any of you have been out there, but this area here, every tree on that piece would meet your requirement of a bigger than 4-inch caliper or bigger than a 15-foot tall evergreen tree. And there's basically one tree every 9 feet every direction, because that was planted as a CRP in that area, which it was originally in this property as well. So, I don't know, that might be kind of troublesome, the tree removal. And maybe there's a way around that. I don't know how that would work out. I guess we would be interested in it if the city of Nevada does review, or how that works. I'm not sure how that works at this time. You pointed out the environmental health director had made comments. When would those additional submittals get provided then? Would that be part of the preliminary plat stage or a later plat stage? Do we know when that?
Leanne, looking to the expert.
And the only, I guess, concern is kind of what this lady spoke about. With a relatively small lot of 1 acre, it doesn't leave a lot of space for septic tank and laterals and that type of thing.
The current regulations require that soils report to be submitted with the preliminary plat. So we can't apply the current regulations. The former regulations simply referenced the location and manner providing water supply, if using wells, and wastewater treatment facilities in conformance with requirements of Ordinance Number 110 as documented by representatives of the Story County Environmental Health Department. And so what we've relied on is in the past they had a letter or something from the health department that says yes, they've had the studies done, they've taken the necessary steps they've needed to identify where the on-site wastewater treatment can go or where wells will be located to ensure proper separation distances. The new ordinance requires that be submitted with the preliminary plat. So it really doesn't, the old regulations don't clearly say it has to be a part of the preliminary plat. It's actually in both preliminary plat language and final plat language in the old regulations. So it's a very gray area.
Okay.
I think in having conversations with Margaret Jane, she would much prefer that be done sooner in the platting process, because that may dictate buildable area of lots and whether or not lot sizes need to be amended or lot lines adjusted in order to accommodate the placement of on-site septic on a property-by-property basis.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Can we answer your Nevada question real quick, too? the commission wants me to? Yes. City of Nevada does. It does need to go to Planning and Zoning Commission and City Council for preliminary and final plat, both, unless the city were to waive their approval authority, and I have not seen anything to that regard.
And I was a little confused by the building setback, too. I know you addressed that, Leanne, a little bit, but I don't see the building setback shown on some of these lots yet, and maybe that only shows up on the final plat. For on lots 4, 5, and 6, they have the utility easements, but not the building setbacks, and so I'm not sure where that would be placed. And the other thing I'd like to point out, lots 1, 2, and 3, I think would also, and maybe this doesn't apply because it's new, but would also be a double frontage lot because they would have an easement along this side and along this side, which means that they would have a front setback requirement on both ends, typically.
Can we talk to... That's something that I did not include in the staff report because... let me answer your first question first. Let me see if I can do it this way. The way I read the plat, this line down here, and you're correct, for lot 6, the setback lines are not shown. But that's not atypical. A lot of plats are submitted. They do the general notation. Front setback is 50 feet, rear is, and that has been accepted. But in areas where there are concerns with whether or not it's a corner lot, like lot 1, or in this case where the access easement boundary happens to be the same as a 50-foot front setback, my understanding in reading the plat, I just lost this again, it's that yellow squiggly line for the front setback, yeah, for lots 4 5, and 5, and then lot 6 is not yet determined.
Okay.
Yeah. And the lots, I agree with Keith's comment on the double frontage of lots 1, 2, and 3, but that's where it gets even more gray area because these are access easements. They are not public right-of-way or even public easements. So I don't think we can apply that. And that's even kind of a cause for concern on lot 1 when I commented the corner setback lot. But that's, I think, constricted enough with the two access easements, and then you add the third to the rear that we do at the minimum one, look at lot 1 being a corner setback. Having a corner setback. You're correct, though. If these are all platted right-of-way, the 1, 2 definitely are through lots.
Mm-hmm. You also made a comment that there's an additional 10-foot of easement. Is that on this piece right here?
That's what we seem to recall from that second addition coming forward, and that'd be a question for Orson to answer whether or not. He's nodding his head, yes, there is another 10 feet. It's not shown on here, and I think it needs to be because right now it does not, at least reference to it, does not meet the 50-foot requirement.
Mm-hmm. You made a comment, or maybe it's in the regs, that outlots are not buildable. So does that mean you can't put anything on an outlot? I mean, in general, or... come up before, or...
I will read the definition. We cannot issue a zoning permit for an outlot. So you possibly could do... I mean, if we're talking development as applied floodplain ordinance, you could put septic system out there or non-structural types of development. But the old definition and the current both say you cannot issue a zoning permit, and we require all structures to have a zoning permit.
Can that outlot, can whoever owns that outlot come in later and subdivide that outlot? into a buildable lot and another outlot if it's not in a floodplain?
Yes, they can. And that's outlot means a remnant of a lot, parcel, or tract of land left over from platting, which is intended to use as open space or for a future subdivision for which no zoning permit shall be issued. So if we if this was all not constrained by floodplain and they had just a barren 40-acre piece and was relatively flat, if you look at Timber Ridge south of here in Nevada, and those of you go down Country Club Road south of Nevada, there's a 7-lot subdivision to your west or east by Hertz Woods Preserve. I'm not sure the exact name. That 6-7 lots is one phase of the larger intention of 40-some lots out there, I believe. Everything else is an outlot, and we know it will be coming forward at some point in the future. But I think these have enough restrictions. These could possibly have enough restrictions that they, and that was another reason for that plat note for no future subdivisions, that they would not be deemed buildable.
That would be, I guess, a concern of ours that they, you know, aren't, but maybe they can be, whatever the ordinance allows. Those, I guess, were our concerns with the way it's submitted now. Like I said, we haven't talked to Orson about it or really know what the concern. I think the biggest concern from our standpoint is the smallness of the lot, given that you do have to have septic in the area and provide, you know, access to them and the general nature of the area that's there. Most of the lots are in the 3 to 5 to 7 acre range, and so that would be like all of 6 lots basically put together rather than individual 1-acre lots. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hobson. Anybody else?
Brad Sampson, 6th M Avenue, Nevada.
I actually own lot 3.
It's a trick of the day.
So I'm probably impacted the most here. Most of the points I was going to bring up have already been brought up, but I guess my main one is this access road right here. Couldn't they just all stick to this access road and be kind of like a normal cul-de-sac? And then is there any setback regulations in regards to this, or can you build a road right on my lot line? And then I have an easement here, and then after Orson sells that land, I guess someone can address who's going to be responsible for that. Because Chaz, he's partially responsible, and Orson's responsible. I'm responsible for any damage, but I'm not responsible for any. But I don't know what that's going to do to my current covenants that I have and things of that nature. And then I guess most of the other things have been already addressed. But I also have another drive here. So my house is going to be surrounded by driveway here, driveway up here, and then another driveway here. I don't know if that goes into part with the double plantation road or however that.
Are you looking for an answer? Or just wondering.
Throwing it all out there, I guess. I don't really. This is all new to me. This whole thing.
Yes. Any input on that, Leah?
Just in regards to the where that road can be built or access drive can be built, it could go as long as it's within the confines of the easement. And I guess that's something else I should point out. Even though we require a 50-foot access easement, we don't have a width of the roadway that has to be placed in there. It's just defining, but it in for all for purpose of discussion, it could be 50 feet and it could be right hugging your property line, right?
There's no
right. There's not. No, not for the access easement.
Okay. And then do you know anything about my current covenant opposed to this or anything like
Mm-mm.
that?
No.
Okay. And then can it be, I don't know. I guess that's not really here. And it's probably been addressed with regards to the pavement. Seems having to be paved, but not.
Yeah.
Okay. No. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's really all I have, I guess.
I don't think you got an answer you like, so I don't. I quit asking. Thank you. Anybody else? Okay. Okay. Name and address, please. Name for sure.
Well, Aaron Zim again, Ames, Iowa. I have a question about the access easements for both sides, assuming that they go in from whatever the cemetery access on is on 7 or up at the top of S 14. Do you have to keep your accesses dry? Because on those pictures, they look awful wonky and waterlogged. I mean, do you have to maintain a certain distance from the floodplain in regards to that or existing properties like the city cemetery as far as where you put your driveway in?
No, if we're talking about lot 7, if they do come up from the south to access lot 7, with the floodplain, if any placement, if they did want to put that driveway so it was anywhere, any part of it within the floodplain, they would need a floodplain development permit. And beyond that, we also require if, I don't have the exact verbiage, but if you are accessing a property that takes that goes through the special flood hazard area. It needs to be designed so that it remains passable during 100-year flood.
Okay.
So it may have to be engineered and designed accordingly. I don't think the other two access easements are within the floodplain boundaries.
No. They just look a little soft.
Yeah.
That was what we had wondered about 7, was it did look like parts of the floodplain ran all the way to the property boundary in a small part.
You could have a driveway, but you'd have to meet the floodplain regulations and go through that very separate permitting process than the body. If you guys want to take that over, you're more than welcome to.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Zine. Final chance. Okay, seeing nobody move to the microphone, I'll close the public comments part of this and look for a motion and a second so we can discuss.
I'd like to move that the Story County Planning and Zoning Commission table the major subdivision plat put forth in case SUB 0913 back to the applicant and staff for further review and modification, directing the staff to place the item on the December 2nd, 2013 Planning and Zoning Commission agenda under old business, and specifically in the presentation there were a number of deficiencies in the plat that need to be addressed. And it sounds like more discussion with the neighbors and understanding what the applicant's plans are. The applicant certainly has the right to subdivide the land, and that's not in question, but making sure that all the requirements of all the appropriate requirements of the ordinance are met. And appropriate being the ordinance at the time the subdivision started as opposed to today.
Could you repeat that motion? Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Second by Miller. Motion by Gass. Okay, discussion.
I would agree totally with Steve. Steve started discussing it before we actually got the second here, but that's all right. We knew what he was trying to do. Yeah, there's still quite a few questions, and I think even the applicant realized there's things, and we questioned earlier as to why we were even discussing already with so many questions, and it happened to be with a timing issue. So I think this can be a doable project if some of these things get the questions get answered appropriately.
We have to have in there the December 2nd part that if they couldn't make enough progress in that time span, could they just bring it forward when they're ready and not specifically say December 2nd?
You can, if it's tabled, you can
bring it when
at your
ready.
Next meeting, you'll have to physically remove it from the table. So if they're not ready, it will just remain tabled.
Other comments? I guess I'd like to make a comment. I drove by the land kind of around it and stuff, and it is beautiful property. And if I were you, I'd like to develop it myself. I don't have a lot of sympathy for people that have got large lots and don't want to see smaller ones come in next to them. But I think there's way too much work to be done on this, and I hope when you come back that that will be complete. So. Okay. Any other comments? We have a motion on the table, on the floor here to table it. Roll call, please.
Gast?
Yes.
Brothers?
Yes.
Veggie?
Yes.
Donaldson?
Yes.
Miller?
Yes.
Kauser?
Yes.
Okay, and the motion passes. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for those of you that got up and spoke. We appreciate that. It's good to hear from you. It's good to hear views. Leanne, I don't know how many people we normally have on the Planning and Zoning Commission, but 7? You see, we only have a few up here, so if anybody's interested, think about that. Sorry, why is it important?
Yeah, I was being facetious when I said, where did it come
from? Okay, we've got to carry on a meeting yet here, so if you can take it outside, that'd be great.
Where is everything other than condition?
Okay, other business.
We'll wait a minute.
Thank you all. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Carry on.
The Villaretti rezoning will be going to the plant Board of Supervisors next Tuesday, November 12th. The Villaretti rezoning, that was the rezoning to the northwest of the city of Ames along County Line Road, going from A1 to A2 for the seed corn business. The same meeting date will be the first consideration of the proposed change from the commercial and industrial districts to one commercial light industrial district, or whatever we call it. That will be first consideration next week. This Wednesday evening, all three conditional use permits that were heard by you last month for wind turbines are before the Board of Adjustments. And I do want to give you a heads up because one of the neighbors for the wind turbine, just turbines west of town here, west of Nevada, between Nevada and Ames, will be likely presenting a text amendment, amending the language of our ordinance in regards to wind energy conversion systems to add standards of approval as applied to shadow flicker. We are silent on that, and he has done some research. So that, as a text amendment, will be amending the Code of Ordinances. If he does submit that, it will come here first for your review, and you will recommend that to take recommended action on the proposed language to the Board of Supervisors. We have not had an entity outside staff bring forward a text amendment for at least 10 years. So it will be a process very similar to when we recommend text amendments or bring text amendments to you. It's the same process, just different applicant and put staff in a little bit different role.
And it's certainly healthy to have that kind of outside input, because neither staff nor commission can think of everything, and having those other ideas brought in. But you said that you will be bringing it forward without review and recommendation?
No, we're just in different realm here. We'll review it. I don't know if we'll do a recommendation. Again, we haven't processed one for so long, and there'll be a little of education that we need to do. When we initially wrote the CLEX regulations, shadow flicker was there. It was present. The science wasn't as advanced as it is now, and the studies hadn't been as thought out as they are now. So honestly, I don't know his time frame. I think he's rather serious about it, but he does have to pay the applicable fee, and I don't know if he'll submit today or in 6 months. But I mean that could be likely on the horizon. Pardon? I can't think of the name right now.
He's the person right next to it.
Yeah, if you remember.
Oh, the one that, yeah, right across from the Lincoln Way Energy.
There were two houses on each corner of the property, and east corner and west corner on the north side, right along Lincoln Way, and one of them was going to get shadow flicker and one time of the year, and the other was going to get it at the other time of the year, depending upon sunrise and sunset.
Do you remember how close they were to where the towers are going to be?
Well, yeah, they were relatively close.
Yeah.
No, we're discussing the old case. We're not discussing the merits of it right now.
No, this one.
How far were they?
I can't remember the number of feet, but I remember the diagram that shows the number of hours impacted, and it was approximately, if I remember correctly, 100 hours a year.
Okay, it's late. Let's move on. We'll pick this up next time. Come on. Oh, good for you. Okay, any other business from you, Leanne, and staff?
I kind of did one and two at the same time.
Okay. So that means, adopt the 2014 calendar?
And just before you do that, here's what I'm recommending. January 8th, and this would just be your training calendar, we would do county development plan. April 9th, you would do Ames Urban Fringe Plan. July 9th, you would do just practicum, whatever that might mean. And then October 8th would be your joint meeting with the Board of Supervisors.
Go through that again?
Oh, no. Wait, I'm looking at the consultant.
I was going to say, it's
January
not our meeting.
January 6th, April 7th, July 7th, and October 6th. Thank you. I was on the wrong meeting date. Wrong group, conceptual review. Just quickly, we tomorrow is the deadline for the next month's Planning and Zoning Commission. We found that we can turn around applications a lot sooner than what we used to be. And we have conceptual reviews, and the way the current process is, if they come into conceptual review, they'll meet that next week. They've missed the deadline for the December meeting. And so it puts them, there's like a 6 week delay. And we think we're successful enough that they can do conceptual review. If they have their act together and they can submit that data the following, turn around to you guys. So we're recommending changing the deadline to primarily the 13th of each month, unless it's a holiday, and then it would shift to the 14th. And that's just for April July and September. And that's going to be the true for the Board of Adjustment, too. So for staff perspective, we only have one deadline date a month to worry about. Makes our lives easier.
I think that, you know, it depends upon what you think. How you can do it, as opposed to...
We might bring it forward if we didn't think we could do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Not working, well, next year you'll be adopting your calendar again. So...
This is public, but I'm actually a little bit ticked off about this last case. I mean, it came in so unprepared.
Oh, yeah.
I wish you would have had the... I know in the past you've said, boy, I'd like to kick this one off. So.
Yeah, that's why I was being facetious with the conditions.
Yeah.
Give me a list.
And if you would have asked me what I recommend... And, you know, staff won't just give you a recommendation unless you ask for it. I would have said table it, option 4.
I think we all arrived at that pretty soon. Okay, anything else?
Adopt the calendar.
Okay, is there a motion to adopt the calendar?
So moved.
Oh, I think. Is there a second?
I was told we had to get home. So.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
any commission comments quickly? Susan? Nancy? Well, I think we arrived at good decisions tonight.
Nope.
Motion adjourned.
So moved.
No. You have staff comments. I'm sorry. In December, obviously, there will be a large rezoning to the northwest of Ames coming in. Rezoning the subdivision plat at this point, but it's something none of you have seen and dealt with. Let's put that. How's that for a teaser? And also at your next meeting, you'll have to do election of officers, and you need to keep in mind that this next meeting will be Daryl's last meeting, and he's decided not to accept another term.
So. No, I've just got some other commitments I'd like to take up on. So
just keep that in mind, because one of your first things, Daryl will remain the chair next meeting, but we do try to do it December or November before to maintain the continuity and leadership.
I'll say this, and Stephen can attest to it too. Actually, being chair is really, it's a nice position. I've enjoyed it. The only thing I don't like about it is you don't get to make the initial motion, but other than that, I think it's a great, not difficult for sure. So.
You're not retiring.
Okay, now do I have a motion to adjourn? Towser. Is there a second? Struthers?
Sure.
All those in favor of adjourning?
Aye.
Thank you.